Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Eric Dean, Ironworker, General President International, extraordinaire. Eric, I cannot tell you how pleased I am to have you on the air today. It is my pleasure. All of you that have tuned in, you're listening to Live with Kathy on Blog Talk Radio, the world's largest social network reaching listeners not only locally, nationally, and imagine reaching listeners in any country in the world. Discover what the world has to say. And we're going to discover what Eric has to say. It's Labor Day, summer's last hurrah. So, how does it affect you, Eric? Tell us about you.
Well, you know, as general president of a labor organization representing 130,000 working men and women, it's a time to reflect and take pause on the work that our members do and the work that every worker does, whether they're in a labor union or not. Labor Day is a signification of taking pride in what you do, no matter what the task. You know, there's a lot of dignity in work, and so for us, it's a very special. For the labor movement, it's extremely special because it has some. For the average person, they think it's the end of summer, a time for picnics, a time, a 3-day weekend, and a reward for the hard work that they do at their job. And it is all of those things. But its true significance is there was labor unrest at the early start and during the Industrial Revolution of this country. And there was a lot of capitalists that were just grinding workers to a pulp and using excessive force and various tactics. And it all blew up in a Haymarket incident in Chicago years ago. And the history is what it is, but what happened was the world decided that workers needed to celebrate workers and have a day, and it was formed as May Day. And around the world, that's the world's Workers' Day. In true fashion, in the United States, Congress sometimes is manipulated by capitalists, and they would not allow us to, you know, it might have been perceived as maybe communist or thinking about how the rest of the world was, but they settled on September as a settlement to commemorate workers. So the commemoration, I do not want to be Debbie Downer, the commemoration of people's work, it's important, and every year we need to take pause. Think about that. But we have to remember the struggles and the fights for the 8-hour workday to get young people out of the workforce so that they could get educated and improve themselves so they couldn't be exploited. So I have a double meaning when I celebrate Labor Day. I look at how far we've come, and then I look at some of the things that I see history repeating itself. But by no means should everyone have a glum view of the weekend. It should be a celebration of what they do and how they contribute to society.
I've spent the entire week. On Tuesday, I did the labor movement part one, the history of the labor movement. And I've encouraged everyone to get the book. I don't know if it's available, Eric. The Ironworkers, 1896 to 2006, A History of the Ironworkers Union. And a little sidebar. When you see the guy sitting on the steel ream, the rod there, up in the sky, if you go to the far left, you'll see the one guy lighting the cigarette of the other steel worker, and then the third one, that looks like my pa. My father was he worked for Wisconsin Steel, and he walked to work every single day. And I inherited his work ethics. But let's go back to September 1st. My first part was, when and where did it all begin? But I have to tell you, there were times when I had to put the book down. Eric, the guys were working 10 hours a day. I think this was in 1890 for $2.10 a day. How could they be? How did they survive?
Well, I believe wages are commensurate with probably the current rate of the economy. But there is no doubt that our union was formed to provide a safer work site and to pool our collective voice to get better wages and working conditions. And, you know, back then I suppose milk and a loaf of bread was significantly less, but what we wanted to do was stabilize the wages so that workers could get their just reward along with the companies that were building the bridges and the early skyscrapers.
Okay, I digress for a moment. Let's go back to, you talk about the establishment of Labor Day versus May Day. Was there a little bit of conflict there? Because when I went online, in many countries, they celebrate May Day. That is, it reflects Labor Day here. So did we not want to call it May Day? We wanted to be our very own Labor Day, the significance of America?
Well, the government pushed that line of thinking as far as in Congress when they finally acknowledged and passed it. Its formations were formed in the roots of celebrating the Haymarket martyrs that occurred in Chicago, and the world picked May 1st, and so the U.S. did want to have its own, and so you know there is some relevance to that where we could truly celebrate our own, and that was kind of the spin. If you read some of the labor historians, though, it was a defiance to adopt to a unified World Workers' Day. And so, you know, it is what it is, and it's what all people in the labor movement and all workers should take a day to recognize their contributions. We don't have jobs without capitalism. I'm not foolish, but the capitalists don't have any products without labor. And so everyone, whether they're a service-oriented person or they make something or they construct something or they teach or educate, should take pause and really reflect on how they better society by their contributions.
You're listening to Live with Kathy on Blog Talk Radio, and our special guest is Eric Dean, Iron Workers General President Extraordinaire and International. To find out more about Iron Workers, log on www.ironworkers.org. That's www.ironworkers.org. And I don't think that many of you know that Iron Workers offer a full spectrum in career development. Earn while you learn. We'll talk about that later. I'm fascinated with the history, the trials, the tribulations, and the turbulent years. And by the way, all of you out there, the show is archived. Let me give you the link. blogtalkradio.com/Kathy Watson, CathiWatson, and when you log on, be sure and click on September 4th, but the link is there, and click, and then go on, and then scroll down, because the show will be not in the beginning, but as you scroll down at the front of the first page that comes up. Now, Eric, when I read, the Cowboys in the Skies, but let's go back to the guys that really started the movement that said, hey, wait a minute, we've got to unionize, we've got to come together to secure our position in the industrial world. And then when did safety enter the picture? Because I remember, digressing, you know that I married an iron worker, and I had a conversation with a Silver Fox yesterday. I said to him, I'm going to have Eric on the air. Oh, he said, he loved ironworking, and he still talks about it. And he told me, he said, I started working as an ironworker in 1947. And I said, Bill, in 1890, the guys were getting $2.10 a day. And he said, Kath, in 1947, I was getting $2.15 an hour. So we have come a long way, baby. But let's go, and we didn't have OSHA then, and I want to talk about that. When did that come into the picture, and who was the brainchild behind it? But let's go to the Founding Fathers. Do you recall the incident that goes back, what was it, in 1882?
Actually, you'll have to refresh my memory.
Okay. Let's go back to, here we go, where was it? It all began on Tuesday, February 4th, 1896. When delegates from Boston, Chicago, Buffalo, New York, Pittsburgh, and Cleveland met at Moorhead's Hall at the corner of 2nd and Grand Streets in Pittsburgh. Many of the delegates stayed at the nearby St. Charles Hotel at the corner of 3rd and Wood Street. Due to weather and traveling conditions, the date was moved to February 4th. Although our union was founded on that day, the story of the struggle of workers in North America and in the world has been a long one. So what happened? Who was the guy? Can you even speculate to say, wait a minute, this ain't right. We're getting a raw deal here.
What happened was the Industrial Revolution was happening and immigration was at a real high pace. And construction was ongoing. And there were unions. A lot of our early members were European immigrants, and they came from labor guilds. Some were, American citizens, but many of them had a unionized formation back in Europe. And when they came, they brought their skills, and bridgemen were kind of separate from housesmiths, and steel wasn't quite being integrated into structural steel into buildings at that time. And what we recognized was the need that workers were not going to get anything individually, and these large steel corporations, they were true capitalists, and they would grind workers to a pulp with longer work days than what was needed. And there was deaths and fatalities on construction sites were rampant, and so they wanted to get together to just provide a decent burial simply for the workers. They kind of at that time accepted that the work was dangerous and you couldn't build any safety into the process. Well, I can tell you since 1896 to present, organized labor has advocated for the establishment of OSHA, the implementation, and there's been a progression of safety rules that tries to send a worker home and intact, not only prevent a fatality, but to prevent injuries. But our early formation was really an acceptance of, well, someone's going to die, and we need to pool our money together to get better wages and to take care of those families. I mean, they were just tired of being exploited, and so various entities came together, and our international was formed, but there was other formations of unions prior to that. I know, like in Chicago, where I'm from, there was a bridgeman's union, not affiliated with this international, but formed of itself. There was a housesmiths and an ornamental union, and it was made up of European immigrants, and then later on, people affiliated. They built the international. They came together. The six founding fathers, and then it's been building ever since. And you can say that for every trade, they have a similar story. But ours basically was just to try and take care of workers once something tragic happened.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's back up. You did say that with the influx of the European worker coming into America, are you suggesting that they were way ahead of their times, that they already had a union, and perhaps we caught on to it?
The building trades are formed off of the European guilds, where the master mentor, the journeyman, and the apprentice. And we didn't invent something here in the United States. We just expanded off of a worker guild. And while there's the subtle difference between, say, the construction unions and industrial unions, the construction unions still form off of that quasi-guild where you learn your experience, the journeyman does, it passes down his training, and people get experience in various ways. Some of them on the job. Today, we have regimented, structured training. But back then, it was there were no pre-training programs to become a bridgeman, a housesmith, or a structural ironworker. There was simply a need to band together to have a louder voice than, say, the U.S. Steel Corporation or the Bethlehem Steel or the Carnegie's folks. The big industrials, you know, they would just chew workers up and spit them out. And construction has evolved into a very safety-minded business, but back then it was not the case. There were actuaries or bean counters, you could say. They could predict how many lives would be lost in the course of a building of a bridge or the construction of a high-rise or building of a dam. And they readily accepted those, and we've always fought to protect our workers and implement better safety rules. And, you know, we're happy where we're at, but we're never quite satisfied that we've done everything we can possibly do.
Eric, what was the attraction back then? What was the attraction? How did the guys get to know? How were they introduced into the building trades?
Well, it certainly wasn't with Facebook or Twitter.
No.
I guess word of mouth, you know.
Good
people,
one.
They used to use the word tramp, and they were traveling workers, and they'd go from city to city, and, you know, there wasn't a lot of capital being spent. There wasn't 10 tower cranes like you might see on a city high-rise or skyline in any major city. There was a bridge being built over a river, and then they knew of the next bridge being built in the formation of the railroads or the expansion of cities. And in word of mouth, I guess, through telegram and through various methodologies, I can only speculate as to what the communication methods were, but I do know that it was more common for those workers. They were nomads. They were not a Chicago native who stayed there his whole life. If a bridgeman traveled with a company, they oftentimes went from wherever the next bridge was to the next bridge was, and by word of mouth, and so forth and so on. So in the beginning, you could say the country was formed kind of on the east to west migration. There was a west coast always existence, but you know, our early formation was just like the eastern side of the United States, and somehow there was a network, and I only speculate as to what it was.
And I don't think they had health care or pension.
No, back then, health care was just you had enough wages to go pay the doctor when your family, you know, we tried to have everything through the wages was the way of getting a worker ahead. That all evolved through over the course of the formations of unions.
I have to tell you, this book, The Birth of Our Union, they were listening to Eric Dean, President International of Iron Workers. And the website is www.ironworkers.org. And the show is archived in about 20 minutes after we're off the air. You could log on, blogtalkradio.com/Kathy Watson, C-A-T-H-I, and click on the date and you'll be there. But Eric, I have to read this paragraph to you. It's on page 15, chapter 2. The book is fascinating. In fact, I don't think I even got to page 30 because I was just immersed in. Since steel erection attracted only the most daring of independent men, little or no thought was given to the need for formation of an effective union for their protection. Nevertheless, you guys, many of these eligible bachelors admired from a distance below by the wholesome young girls of the gay 90s for their feats of courage and strength. Later gave thought to such things as provision for sickness, injury, or death to protect their families. Primarily for these reasons, delegates from independent unions in the major cities met in Pittsburgh on February 4th, 1896. And after a few years of fierce struggle, our union was fully recognized and took its rightful place among the older and prominent trade unions in America. Now, let's have, I'm not making this fun, but how on earth did the young, wholesome girls from the gay 90s find these guys. And they really were admired for their courage and their strength. How did
well,
that happen?
I can tell you that people still marvel today at the skills of our members, especially when you're on the ground and you look up at any skyscraper and you see workers working aloft. It's not for everyone, and so we often have the admiration of a lot of people. And I don't know how any person finds their spouse, but there's an attraction some way or another.
Absolutely. Oh, iron workers, what a noble profession. Co-creators of art in the form of creative construction. And I use the analogy in the book, A Ballet on the Beam. Remember Frank DeMarco and I, when we did Love Letters, we talked about it. And he said, hey, Missy, just remember, when you're climbing the John Hancock or doing any of this stuff, we iron workers made it safe for you. And then in my conversations, I mean, the transition and the growth is overwhelming, and none of you out there will recognize it or feel the passion that I do until you're married to an iron worker and read the book. And Bill would tell me, he never told me what he did when he went to work, but once he retired, he would say, well, Kathy, I remember walking the beam and three or four stories high, and there was absolutely no net to protect me if I fall. So how is this? When and how did OSHA come into this?
Well, all of organized labor wanted a formation of worker protection, and we kept badgering and badgering the federal government for worker protection and advocating on our behalf. You know, as is today with elected officials, we have allies who recognize various needs of workers, and where business and labor sometimes have divergent paths, it wasn't always in a business's best interest to protect the workers. So we felt fortunate enough after seeking I don't know the exact year that OSHA was formed, but I know that it was a persistent pursuit of organized labor and the AFL.
Now, you all know that I'm pro-union, and I'm thinking of the opportunities that all of you grasshoppers have here. Iron worker, the Dom Perignon of the trades. Do you want a job or a career? You could have a career in ironworking, but you have to qualify. That's why you're going to log on www.ironworkers.org.
And Kathy, I'd like to tell you that organized labor and the ironworkers had a part in this. As a whole, we have probably set the path for all workers, whether they're in a union or not, as far as worker protections, the formation of OSHA. OSHA doesn't just protect union workers, it protects all workers.
I didn't know that.
The formation of child labor laws to get kids into school and to a pathway forward and get them out of the workforce so there was not child exploitation was a direct action of organized labor. And it benefits everyone, whether their families were or were not in a union. We advocated for public schools. And you know what's the tragic part is today, I'm kind of reminded that, we saw immigrants being exploited by language barrier early on so that companies could pit, say, in the mining industry or in the ironworking industry, various races and cultures and separate them. And today we're seeing an influx of immigrants, and even today you would be shocked at worker exploitation we come. Now, there are places where people work under union protection and you don't see it, and so you become oblivious to it. But what our organization does is try to shine a light on places where the union doesn't represent the workers and the workers get exploited without proper respirators and rest breaks and in heat and hot conditions on the construction site. And so we look a lot, we focus a lot on that history that you have talked about to guide us in the future, because presently A lot of things are great, and nothing gets magnified that much. But we're seeing workers, say, in New York City with no welding shield, and they're welding, and their eyes, they're having to go to be hospitalized because no one's taught or trained them to protect themselves from the harmful rays. We're seeing workers weld on with noxious fumes on various things, and they're welding and not given the breathing relief that they need, that OSHA requires. So the union has fought a good fight. We have 130,000 members. We have great wages. But there are so many workers that are still being exploited today in the 2000s. And so it's a tireless pursuit on behalf of our union to represent all workers in the industry and give them a safe place to work at a fair wage. We recognize the employer needs to be profitable, but we are looking for fair compensation and then decent health care and retirement dignity.
Okay, Eric, we're in 2015. You mean to tell me that workers are still being exploited?
We've got immigrant refugees being brought into welding fabricating shops in company housing that they don't get paid enough wages, just like back in the old company towns when they built roads. And they don't earn enough wages to feed themselves, to pay for the housing, and oftentimes they either sleep at the workplace. It's happening today in dark corners, not on every corner, but there's worker exploitation happening. And the illegal immigrants, they are being exploited by contractors who turn a blind eye to the immigration laws. And I don't fault a worker for trying to come in and work for wages, but what they're doing is they're threatening deportation if they say anything about enforcing a worker's right. So we've been trying to help the folks try and level the playing field.
How do those people sleep at night? Now, unfortunately, we only have about 2.5 minutes left. We could go on for 3 hours. You're listening to Life with Kathy, and our guest is Eric Dean, General President of Ironworkers International. What an extraordinary individual. Now, and log on www.ironworkers.org to learn more about your opportunities, and it's not for the faint-hearted. You have to have skills. You have to have a passion. You want to truly build America, not just, and you have to qualify. That's why I'm telling you to log on to www.ironworkers.org. The show is archived, blogtalkradio.com/Kathy Watson, CathiWatson, and click on the date. And then forward the link to your email database. Encourage them to forward it to their email database. Within minutes, Eric, we could circle the world. Now, I have to come back to what is a passion of mine. Women in ironworking. When and how did that happen? And I salute them.
Well, you know, civil rights started to try and get us diversity in the workplace. And it started by having ethnic diversity, inclusion, and then later on, women's rights followed, coupled with civil rights. And we started, I would say, in the late 60s, starting to see more female members. We've always had them in the fabrication and production shops, dating back to Rosie the Riveter. And on the construction side, it kind of migrated, I would say, in the late 60s. And today, we have a full-fledged program for inner-city people of color, and specifically more women and more veterans in the trades. And so we are an inclusive group, and we are better than where we were, and we know we need to improve on our diversity and be more inclusive. And I have appointed a committee with our training director to find the best practices, to find the folks who found the sweet spot on female, not only recruitment, but retention, minority recruitment and retention, veteran recruitment and retention. And that's the organization we want to be reflective of society and welcome all parts of society into our workforce because...
Eric, dear, I hate to interrupt. We have 18 seconds. What lasting words do you have of encouragement to America?
Work is on the rise. If you need a job, contact ironworkers.org, And we are proud to represent the workers who are in our union and seeking to make a better life for those that haven't found a way into our union yet.
Thank you, Eric. It is my pleasure. Ironworkers.org. We'll do this again. We have so much more to share with you. Happy Labor Day. Thank
Happy
you,
Labor
Eric.
Day.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.